It is Thursday, June 18th, 2015, and you are listening to The Kickabout. The Kickabout is the Nationals podcast focusing on football in the UAE, and it is part of the Extra Time series. I am your host, Paul Freeland, and joining me on the phone is John McCauley, globetrotting sports reporter with The National. John, have you shaken off your jet lag yet?
Just about. How you doing?
All right, doing good. Busy day, too. But we'll get started with a look back at the past two matches for the UAE national team. It was hardly a rousing start on the road to Russia, as the UAE lost 3-0 to South Korea in a friendly in Kuala Lumpur, then struggled mightily before overcoming East Timor 1-0 in their first 2018 World Cup qualifier. 80 minutes of fruitless, largely one-way traffic were broken when East Timor's defense switched off momentarily and allowed Omar Abdulrahman time and space to score from 20 yards. John, we'll start with this. How much do we put these two performances down to just fatigue? I mean, national team players, they had the League Cup, President's Cup, Asian Champions League, Gulf Cup, Asian Cup to contend with this season. And even if most of them sat out the League Cup, that's quite the workload.
Yeah, it certainly was. And you could tell that, definitely. Even in speaking to a few guys before the match and then afterwards, you know, all the players, they weren't just looking for excuses. I don't think all the players reference that. It's been a very, very long season, as you said, with you know, a squad predominantly made up of Valian players and Al Akhli players who tend to contest a lot of matches and a lot of high profile matches, which is, you know, very, very kind of demanding, exacting on the body and the mind. So I think it certainly played into it. The UAE were nowhere near as good as what they had been the last time we'd seen them at the Asian Cup when they finished third. So, you know, it wasn't just those guys making excuses. I don't think that Matty Ali said afterwards that Omar had perhaps run further than anybody else on the pitch that day in terms on the UAE side, certainly. And I'd agree with them there. And Matty Ali highlighted the fact that Omar Abdulrahman's only played, I think it's 11 league matches this season for Ali. And, you know, he's been in and out of the team quite a lot. So he would be a lot fresher than a lot of the other guys playing there. Then you had people like Ali Mabkut, he was coming back from injury. So there were a lot of things going on that kind of were consistent with the players being pretty shattered after the season. The timing of the match and the conditions, I would have to say, didn't help either. They were undoubtedly a factor. I think it was 32, 35 degrees at 4 o'clock and just outside Kuala Lumpur, with upwards of 85% humidity. So even just sitting watching it was a bit of a struggle, and those guys had to run around for 90 plus minutes. So, and then we heard afterwards that the players struggled to adjust to the time difference once they had come over after that very, very arduous season that we were talking about. So there were a lot of factors there. The pitch, just have to touch on that as well. It was the match was played at Sengalor Stadium, the Shah Alam Stadium, which isn't the main stadium in Kuala Lumpur. So even though the stadium looked, if Carvana Stadium looks, you know, very, it could be very, very intimidating when it's full. It was a bit dilapidated, and the pitch itself was very, very bobbly. We could tell that whenever we were watching close hand training the night before, the UAE training, the ball was bobbling a lot. So just another thing that kind of wasn't conducive to the UAE playing the usual type of, you know, neat, intricate football that we've become used to.
Mm. You mentioned Matty Ali saying that, you know, obviously Omar ran the most because he only played those 11 league matches. Is Matty Ali making the case that national team players should play less, or that they should get, or that we need to do something to get them used to playing this many matches this often?
I don't know if it is that he wants them playing less. Well, I suppose he would. Any national team manager would want their players not to play as much and to be a lot fresher whenever they come into the national setup. But I would say he's more an advocate for having extended periods with the players, and he would fall out, not necessarily fall out, but there would be disagreements with the league, between the league and the FA, etc., in terms of, you know, how much time that they can afford to take off and give players the camps for Matty Ali, for the national team, to really kind of hone his strategies or his tactics and etc. But I think he definitely wants to have more time with the players, and he wants kind of more more designated breaks throughout the season, but it's just not going to happen, I don't think.
Yeah, because I mean, clubs have to do their job as well. They have their own goals and purposes, which aren't necessarily in lockstep with the national teams. And then one other thing you mentioned, the concentration of talent. I think out of the 23-man roster, Alain had 9 players and Al Ahly had 7. That's what, three quarters of the team. Now you mentioned these players, they're at successful clubs, they're going to be playing a lot of high profile matches. Can we expect this kind of heavy workload and exhaustion to continue if the majority of the national team is drawn from a very, very small group of clubs?
Probably, unfortunately so, because I don't see there being any other way that you can get around it. At present, Al Ahly and Alain are the two strongest teams talent wise. And you know, if you look at Al Ahly, they had 7 players in this 24-man squad, I think it was, and they had just literally a week before the South Korea friendly, those 7 players had been playing a very, very demanding President's Cup final that went to extra time and penalties against Al Nassr, which they subsequently lost. Because of the talent is concentrated in those two teams in the league, it doesn't help that there's a considerable chunk of the national team that comes from those two clubs, but by definition they have the best squads, and that's just the way it's going to be. Mm-hmm. We have seen Matty Ali try and bring more and more players from different clubs into the squad. He had, nearly sure, at the training camp in Abu Dhabi before they went away, whenever a lot of the top players were still involved in the President's Cup, I think he called up 11 Olympic team players. And he referenced that again after the East Timor match. He had said that he is planning for the future. He's looking to integrate as many players as he can from the age group teams, especially the Olympic team, obviously, because that's natural progression. And he said it particularly at forward level, up front, because as we all know, that the league clubs rely on foreign players in those positions, particularly strikers or number 10s, and he's very, very keen to try and look for forward solutions whenever he doesn't have the likes of Ali Mabkut, was injured, as I said, or coming back from injury, I should say. Ahmed Khalil is never the most consistent. He can be very, very good, but he can be very, very bad as well. So Matty Ali knows there's a problem there, and he's just trying to manage that. I would say one last thing. You've got to remember that the top clubs, Al Ahly and Alain, especially the past couple of seasons, they tend to stockpile the best Emiratis. And we've had, Habib Fardan going from Nasser to Al Ahly. Even Rashid Esser went from Wassel to be a fit part player at Alain. And he was, before his injury problems, he was very much in the national team set up. So I think it's just going to continue. And it's just something that it's just a byproduct of the two big clubs looking to push on not only in the league but in the Asian Champions League.
And then just looking elsewhere in Group A, I mean, this round was supposed to be straightforward: beat the lesser teams, split with the Saudis, and move on to the third round where the real challenge starts. But it looks like things might not be as simple as that. East Timor showed they were far from a soft touch, taking a point off Malaysia and giving UAE no end of fits. And then there's Palestine. The last year's Challenge Cup winners pushed Saudi Arabia to the limit before losing their opening qualifier in added time, and then put on a really impressive display in just routing Malaysia 6-0 in Kuala Lumpur. Palestine topped the group on goal difference, and Group A isn't the only one with a surprise leader. You got Guam leading Group D with 2 wins in 2, and it's 15 years on from getting beat by double-digit scores, even by the likes of Tajikistan. And then meanwhile, Iran drawing 1-1 in Turkmenistan. Singapore lead Group E after a heroic draw in Japan, where Iswan Mahmood, the goalkeeper, just made a ridiculous amount of saves. And you have North Korea and Philippines sharing the Group H lead. And the Philippines making a good case of maybe entering the Gulf Cup next year with wins over Bahrain and Yemen. But looking closer to home and hot off the presses today, Al Ahly found out they're going to play Naf Tehran in the quarterfinals of the Asian Champions League. The other ones being ties being Al Hilal versus Laqueer, Kashima Reysol versus Guangzhou Evergrande, and Jeonbuk Motors versus Gamba Osaka. John, any initial thoughts on the Champions League draw for Al Ahly?
For me, it's a very good draw for them. They could have either played, the other two options were Laqueer, this is West Asian, obviously, the other two options were Laqueer, who are the Qatari champions, and Al Hilal, who we know a hell of a lot about, obviously, after them putting Ali in out in the semi-finals last year. So Nas Tehrin, I'd seen him play twice, once live, and this season in Alien, when Alien beat them 3-0 despite Nas Tehrin still having Tehran, I should say, still having a lot to play for, and they were contesting at the top of that group, I'm nearly sure at that stage. So I would say that out of the three possible ties they could have got, this is definitely the most favourable, and I would expect Al Ahly to go through, especially if they sign a top-class striker, which we expect them to this summer.
Speaking of transfers, we've had all kinds of news here in the AGL. Al Jazeera making all kinds of waves. They're bringing back Abel Braga as coach, the man who last brought them a league title back in 2011. And they're also in hot pursuit of Gervinho. Sealing that deal would give Jazeera an attack that would be the envy of many teams of Serie A, with him and Mirko Vucinic and, oh, by the way, Ali Mabkut. But if memory serves, scoring goals wasn't their problem last season. John, what do we make of Jazeera putting all their focus on up front so far?
Well, that was always going to happen because of the climate of the league, and big teams especially tend to go for big name strikers or attacking players. But it's certainly a concern that their defence was, I think they conceded more goals than anyone bar the two relegated clubs last season, despite outscoring everybody in the league. So it's obviously their Achilles heel. It certainly derailed their title challenge. Eric Goretz, the former coach, obviously, he highlighted that on numerous occasions. But I think it wasn't just the goals conceded, it was the manner of them. There were a lot of individual errors. So it's still going to be a problem area, although they have, I think that Faris Juma, the Alien central defender, from what I know, his transfer that was delayed last season because he was called up for military service, I'd expect that to go through if it hasn't already in the past week since it's been away. He was a vital player in Alien's successive league titles from 2012. You would imagine he and Bashir Saeed would be a very good partnership in central defence. They've got bags of experience. Another quick point I would add is Khalid Ishmael, the UAE central midfielder. He provides a nice kind of barricade there alongside Tusili in centre midfield for the defence. He played only sporadically towards the end of the season. He picked up a few injuries just as Jazeera's challenge started to fade for the trophy. So keeping him injury-free is a must, but they will want to add to their defence, whether it's in the market or guys coming through from the under-21 team. I'm not too sure, but I would expect a few more barn burners at their stadium this season.
Mm. And on the topic of coaches, John, we'll wrap up with this. Jazeera have their man. Al Ahly have just signed Cosmin Olaroyo to a contract extension through 2018, which is rare enough in this league. And just before we sat down to record this podcast, we got word on Twitter and through a press release, Al Wahda have just signed Javier Aguirre, former Mexico, Japan, and Osasuna coach, to take over their vacant manager role. Quite an upgrade after just being stood up by Paul Le Guin. Well, there's a lot of name recognition floating around. Gervinho, Banias going after Robinho, Al Ahly moving for John Obi Mikel. And we've got names like Paul Le Guin, Javier Aguirre. It's quite the offseason in the AGL. Is this a sign of the AGL's improving level, or maybe an affirmation of the drawing power of a good paycheck?
I would say it's both definitely. The league is undoubtedly improving, but the main draw, I would still say, and it's probably me being a bit cynical, but I would say it's that they can offer substantially more wages compared to Europe and South America especially. That's why we see so many South Americans over here. I would imagine Robinho is going to have his pockets lined if he does decide to go to Banias. But, it's all the better for the league because we need high-profile names here. We need recognisable guys here in terms of managers and players.
Mm-hmm. Why not? There'll be more to come, hopefully, in terms of news. You've been listening to The Kickabout. This podcast was edited by Diti Unikrishnan and produced by the Nationals Multimedia Desk. Follow the Multimedia Desk on Twitter at NSVUAE and the Sports Desk at NATSportUAE. I'm Paul Freeland. Thanks for listening.